This past weekend was all about graduation for our family. A really big weekend with college ceremonies at two ends of the state. The pomp and joy was tremendous. So many determined and courageous young people beginning their new lives, reaching out into the unknown, taking life risks, their next steps, accepting the push that life is calling from them. At one of the events, I was struck by the sheer honesty of the featured speaker, who began his message by telling the tale of his own troubled childhood, not by extracting pity, but really with authenticity. It was amazing what personal difficulties he had encountered even before he came to attend that institution. He acknowledged his mistakes, but noted that what he had made out of his life at each step along the way. Here was a 36-year-old business entrepreneur who had simultaneously established nonprofit organizations designed to solve social problems. Recently, he raised $1.7 million in post-Hurricane Sandy relief efforts for his hometown in Rockaway Beach, New York. He concluded his speech with clear counsel to these newest graduates, the majority there with much more privilege than he had. He said, in his closing words, "Be more now." I have been inundated with news of recent reports that there are less religious people in the world. On the really early cable news program that I listen to before most of California is awake, they have it on East Coast time, so I just have to watch it super early. They interviewed a Catholic religious leader and asked him about the nuns. You know, I'm not talking about the cloistered women in habits, but the ones that were asked by the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life. When asked what religion they identified with, they answered, "None." So these are the nuns. This is a new category now. So when you hear people talking about nuns, it really isn't a cloistered group that they're talking about. They're talking about this other really big group. These are also similar or the same as those who say that they are spiritual but not religious. Their ranks are growing fast. And in fact, I looked at the charts right on the Pew Research page. 1 in 5 adults fits that bill. And for young adults, it's 1/3. And yet right now is where I wouldn't be surprised to hear you say from your seat, "Hey, those people would probably love it right here." And I agree. They would likely love our brand of organized religion because, as they say, we're not really that organized. And I think that's how we can feel good about that part, right? Indeed, I find this very hopeful that more and more younger people are entering our doors and finding a spiritual home here. Here, I hope, is a place where we can be spiritual in a liberally religious setting, where we can make room for the longings of the heart, to find ways to listen and step out, to be courageous, vulnerable, to be more now, right now. Even if you can't quite define that mystery or have a dislike for the word God, you belong here. If you are LGBTQ, you are welcome here. And not to be changed or fixed, but as you, as who you authentically are, who you are meant to be, you are welcome. If you are single or divorced or partnered or coupled or not sure, you are welcome here. If you have children, you and your children are welcome here. If you are atheist, agnostic, liberally Christian, you are welcome. Pagan or theist, or what did it say in the song? Pagan, Jewish, Muslim, theist, and you're welcome here. Over 100 years ago, when the dean of a Universalist seminary was asked what the Universalists stood for, he replied, "Sir, Universalists don't stand, we move." That's a funny but kind of dodgy answer, I guess. The person who posed the question was likely a tad ticked off, unless you are given to think that what we aim to do and be is more of a becoming, acting, doing in the world we live in, more of a be more now, a developing of competencies, or developing of virtues, as a couple of my fellow clergies describe it. It's a little bit like how we try to explain that thing we called shared ministry. As the membership, all the membership comes together in the central part of the community, which is worship, we are invited to meet life with our own life. As my colleague Vicki Weinstein preaches, she says, we engage in spiritual practices, worship being a major example, to develop competencies, strength, compassion, solidarity, intellectual rigor, peacemaking, training that includes being okay just as we are, but wanting to be equipped for this difficult world we live in when we step outside of the church. Author Annie Dillard speaks of the dangerous nature of the task at hand. On the whole, I do not find us outside of the catacombs sufficiently sensible of conditions. Does anyone have the foggiest idea what sort of power we so blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are children playing on the floor with their chemistry sets, mixing up a batch of TNT to kill a Sunday morning. It's madness, she says, to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats to church. We should be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should lash us to our pews. For the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense, or the waking God may draw us out to where we can never return. As I wrote out the joy and sorrow slip for our member who is away, I was thinking again, as I often do, about how this little liturgical ritual, this one we do with our slips and our candles and naming these things, how this ties us together. Not just as this caring congregation, but to answer the larger need to care for each other's pain and about each other's joys. Immediately, yes, but we don't do it to be a better club. It is our, as Karen Armstrong would say, our charter for compassion, our ways to become better by caring outside of our own lives, even though making room for what we don't know about, for imagining those hurts of which we are unaware. Membership in our society, even in this day and age of rapidly shifting cultural values, aims to address the want which the world cannot supply, the thirst in which we pour our devotion and a greater love. It is the place where we address the inchoate, or attempt to connect to the indescribable string that lifts us outside of ourselves to be more, to connect more, to find a greater depth to our lives, to become more loving. I've mentioned during the year the Standing on the Side of Love program, that is sponsored by Unitarian Universalism. In fact, I meant to wear my yellow standing on the love stole today, you know, the yellow one with the big heart. You know that, what I'm talking about, right? It's got that wonderful heart and it just pops. Its aim, the aim of this program, it is sponsored by Unitarian Universalism. The aim of this program is actually to be interfaith. Everybody is welcome to join, not just UUs. In broad terms, it seeks to harness love's power to stop oppression. So recently, we've been talking about getting those bright yellow t-shirts, getting them here for all of us to have. They make them available. And that we would get Star King Church printed on the back so that we could wear them when we're at public events. We'd be recognizable in solidarity and making our faith visible. We'd be wearing our religion. When I think about the meaning of membership in this congregation, I think it means a number of things at different times to different people. But when we make a commitment, we are somehow saying that we are seeking more meaning in our lives. A decade ago, the commission that studies topics of importance to us, called the Commission on Appraisal, responded to the question of what does membership mean with their publication entitled Belonging. Their conclusion is, a study about membership is really a study about evangelism. And I'm going to quote here so you can hear what they had to say. Healthy evangelism in Unitarian Universalism is simply, or not so simply, the process of building and sustaining healthy congregations that are welcoming and inclusive, congregations that are staffed and planned to meet one of the most basic human needs, the need to be religious, to seek meaning, to make connections. But that group, that Commission on Appraisal, also agreed that membership is a process. And this is why we make agreements, covenants as we call them, because we're not all going to be in the same place. And if we're going to be in it for the long haul, we've got to find ways to get along despite our differences. And to be willing, we talked about commitment and process, to be willing to struggle together. Dissident anti-Nazi Lutheran pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer names it. He says, only that fellowship which faces such disillusionment with all its unhappy and ugly aspects begins to be what it should be in God's sight, begins to grasp in faith the promise that is given to it. The sooner this shock of disillusionment comes to an individual and to a community, the better for both. After all, it's a human enterprise, isn't it? Inevitably, it is imperfect. So, as we named already in our joys and sorrows, just last week we celebrated the latest class of the Building Your Own Theology, and many are now somewhat familiar with the liberationist understanding of the nature of theological inquiry and how that's a understanding that's kind of a liberation theory. The creator of that adult learning program, the Reverend Dr. Richard Gilbert, Dick Gilbert as he's fondly called, lifts up. He says, I continue to maintain that theology comes out of the tough and tender experiences of life. First comes the experience, religion, and then comes the reflection on that experience, theology. This is where we do it, in the covenanted community, the liberal, free church, where we face that want which the world cannot supply and hope to open ourselves with rational mind and tender heart to new discoveries. New healing of old wounds, to make meaning from both the large and the small lessons of life. We do it here, but we don't keep it only here. We're not a club and much more open and welcoming than even a family. I hope and maintain that this can be a place for growth, for health, and for our children, a place to touch inward springs, where they can find a place for lifelong learning and hope, like other lifelong UUs, like Darcy, and like I have. The 13th century Persian poet, the mystic Jalaluddin Rumi, wrote the words, "Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, it doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan of despair. Come, even if you have broken your vows 1,000 times. Come, yet again, come." May membership here mean that this can be a place of forgiveness, compassion, growth, intellectual rigor, of peacemaking, of solidarity. May it mean that in these incredible, changing times, here can be a place to meet the want which the world cannot supply. May it be so. Blessed be, and amen.